The following session was recorded in Seal, Alabama, October 2011, and is presented by Cynthia Nicholson. Compassion fatigue.
There is a way when somebody is in the PTSD mode that they're in shock, they're numbed. If you have a feeling that they're going to a really bad place emotionally, for example, some people that have suffered severe PTSD will also have DID, dissociative identity disorder, and they will have various personalities that have broken off at various stages in their life. Example, Sally Culberth, her husband runs a teen challenge in Arkansas. She has written a book. She tells about her experience of floating over her bed when her grandfather was sexually molesting her. And that image in her mind was a protection of she wasn't really there. The mind is saying, okay, you don't have to deal with this. You're up here. And there are people who will do that, and that personality will stay with them. And so it's not, years ago there was a movie called Sybil. There have been a lot of misunderstandings. Every now and then a CSI will have an episode where they'll do the dual personality or that sort of thing. It's nothing to be scared of. You don't have to be frightened. This is not demon possession. It's a coping mechanism that the person, the child, could not cope with reality, and it's the way the mind split off a way to survive. So you help that person realize, you know, hey, this got you here. Now let's deal with it and work with that reality. But if a person is in a bad place emotionally and you see that you're losing them, now, what's your name? Stacy. Stacy was telling that some PTSD that she has suffered in life, there are certain triggers that will just, you know, used to. Now, see, she's been in this growth, amazing growth mode for 4 years at least, that you've really noticed a big, big difference. But there are people that at the point where the trigger happens and they're ready to go into either another personality or a numbing or checking out. Okay, here we are. What you can do with them is take them to math. You go, you're crazy, Cynthia. What are you talking about? You know the hemispheres of the brain, right brain, left brain. One of the sides, the right brain, is creative, emotional, and all that. The other side is the math side, the science, the checking, the figuring. The good administrators are good left brain people. Good counselors are good right brain people. If you've got both going for you, oh man, are you blessed. But it is impossible when we do MRIs, it is impossible for both sides of the brain to be operating at the same time. So, to get the person from out of using the side of the brain that is emotional and they're going to decompose right in front of you and just go into either numb or ballistic, get them thinking math. And here's a really good, really good one. Count backwards from 100 by sevens. Okay? It takes a little bit of thinking, but not a lot. All you have to do is subtract 7. So you go, okay, right now, you just heard that balloon go off. It sounded like a gunshot. Think of the number 100 and tell me, how much is 100 minus 7? And the person will struggle because they're really wanting to go to this other bad place. But you're challenging them. You're bringing them into the left side of their brain. What's 100 minus 7? 93. Okay, you're good. 93. I'm going to stick with this guy. Okay. Now, 93 minus 7. 86. Okay, now as I'm engaging his left brain, he can't get emotional on me. That's what you can do with people that are ready to go over the edge emotionally. And, you know, if they're really out there and it's just going to be a challenge for them to count backwards, have them count backwards. 100, 99, 98, 97. But don't do 2 plus 2 because that's, you don't use your brain for that. That's an autonomic response. Okay. Where were we? Those of you that wanted to copy that did. And, yeah, it was the resiliency one we wanted to. 7 components of resilience. Here we go. Slideshow. Presenter view. Okay, you want to write that down? I'll give you a minute. Insight. It's more than just asking the tough questions. It's giving honest answers. Independence. Distancing emotionally and physically from the sources of trouble in one's life. Relationships. Making fulfilling connections to other people. Oh, my goodness, I can't emphasize how important relationships are. And that's why so many people have no resilience. They don't have meaningful relationships in their lives. When you have somebody who's come in to the Teen Challenge Center and you say, who are your support people? And they go, I don't have any. You know, that's tough. It's really tough. You become their support people. You create support people around them, don't you? I mean, that's what you do. But if they come in and their family has brought them, and yeah, you know, I was in Lima, Peru at a women's conference, 700 pastoras and pastoras. That means women who are pastors and women who are wives of pastors, but they use the same word for both definitions. And so this was 700 pastoras and pastoras. And in walks a man during the break room. They brought him to the break room. And they said, here's this guy. His brother brought him. And his brother said, he needs God. He's in trouble. He's high on drugs. Blah, blah, blah. And, okay, why did you bring him to this event? Well, can you help him? Yeah, we could help him. But he had a brother. What we found out was the mom was in the event. So after the people dealt with him, prayed with him, you know, got him in a place where he wanted to see mom. She was there. It was wonderful. So you go, okay, he's got a leg up on the journey. A brother brought him. A mom's wanting him to do well, though she might have done some things wrong along the way. But, yeah, it is what it is. Relationships. Initiative. Taking charge of problems, that's when you start saying, I'm going to do something about it next time. I'm going to do it differently and build in. Creativity, using imagination and expressing oneself in art forms. Oh, my goodness, it actually works, believe it or not. Humor, finding the comic and the tragic. That sounds weird, but it actually is healthy. My friend Joanne Butrin ran a healthcare ministry, and she was present during, I forget what country, if it was Rwanda or somewhere in Africa, where refugees, I mean thousands of refugees, were displaced people, and they were living in tents, and the situation was just horrible, day in and day out and day in and day out. They're hearing horrible stories, rapes and children, and just what happens when masses of humanity are just crushed out of their life into another life. All of that was going on. And Joanne and two or three other girls shared a bed because that's all they had in their tent. And she said, and we'd get to giggling. We'd say, okay, we all have to turn over so that we can all turn over at the same time. And they'd all turn over because it was the only way to fit on the bed. And she said, we laughed and then we'd go, we're not allowed to laugh. There's so much suffering around us. We've been suffering all day with the people. But that laughter was healing and healthy. It was necessary to find the moments, appropriate moments, out of the earshot of the people. Morality, acting on the basis of informed conscience. Okay, let's go on to treatment. Okay, we did the recognition and prevention. Now let's go to treatment, and this is where we're going to spend the rest of our time. Okay, we've got various proactive steps. You don't want to internalize debriefing. How many of you have been through critical incident stress debriefing training, CISD training? You have? What was the entity that did the training for you?
Oh, out of Maryland, CSI.
Okay, so you went there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool. Okay. So they were legitimate and they knew what they were doing, and you're certified, I assume? Excellent. Okay. I would trust this guy to do CISD. But somebody who has listened to a brief seminar on CISD, I would not have them come in and do CISD with people who have just experienced a traumatic event together. They need to be debriefed, but it is such a crucial time in their lives that if you push them too hard, you're trying to go to the emotions too fast, if you don't let them tell the story early up and process what was going on, you know, you go from the event to the emotions and back out to the event. But if somebody isn't really careful with it, they'll try to go to the emotions too quickly, and the person can do more damage. And so the way to handle your proactive step of helping a person who has recently been through trauma. Now, PTSD doesn't actually be diagnosed as a disorder for a few months. It takes time. You've got acute stress disorder for the first span of time. And so you're dealing with acute stress before it actually settles into PTSD. It's not PTSD the next morning. So that's the time when you really want to know how to deal with that critical incident debriefing. So get them to process their thoughts, their feelings, and reactions. And what you can do, and now I'm talking if you have a group of people who have experienced the same thing together, just sit them down and have them talk about it. Because the very fact that they will talk from their different perspectives, it will help them see that what they saw and what they experienced is not the truth. You know, when there's an accident on the street corner, the police will ask somebody standing on this corner and he'll ask somebody standing over there in that store how they saw it, because depending on where you're standing, you saw it very differently. And the same thing with a traumatic event. One person will experience it and say, but this is what happened, and somebody else was there and they say, this is what happened, and they might not sound at all alike. But as they talk together, you're actually helping them realize that reality is even bigger than what their own individual interpretation is. Okay. There are proactive steps. First of all, you have to say no. My husband and I do marriage seminars for pastors, and one of the toughest messages to get across is to tell a pastor it's okay to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You know, you can say no in a nice way, not like her, but there's a way to say no nicely, gently, sweetly, kindly. No. In fact, the other night my husband was preaching in Claudio Freisen's church in Argentina, and he talked about the gift of mercy. He said, my mother had the gift of mercy. If people would call in the night, my mother would answer, and she'd say, oh, God bless you, and I'll pray for you. And she'd cry, and we could hear our mom praying with these parishioners. She just, her heart went out to them. He said, now if you call me at 2 in the morning, I'll say, take 2 aspirin, call me again tomorrow morning. Not really big on the mercy gift there. But he's had to learn over the years that you don't just say, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning. He's learned to say, okay, let's just pray right now. Call me back tomorrow. You know, blah, blah, blah. Somebody will be in touch with you. Give them hope that there is an answer. You don't have to go rushing off and do what they want. I remember getting phone calls, people saying, I thought you were pastors of a church. Why won't you drive me to my aunt's house three hours from here? You know, and I'm sure you guys hear the same thing. The people that want to con you into using your Christianity to get what they want. Okay. Well, it happens, it happens, it happens. It happens in the parsonage, it happens in Teen Challenge, it happens on the mission field. And what you say is, well, I think I've learned another way to say no. I learned another one today. Okay. It helps to have a personal mission statement, to know what you are about. To say, this is what I'm called to do. I'm willing, Lord, to expand beyond what my calling is. I'm willing for you to speak to me and step me out of my gifting where you've placed me. But I really better hear from you if you want me to do that, because otherwise I'm going to look at the mission statement that I'm going to ask you to help me design. And as I say, this is what I feel God has for me. And don't make it a long range the rest of my life. Give it a time span. Make your mission statement pertinent to the who you are today, because you may be different 5 years from now. But this amount of time, this is what I feel called to do. And if there are things that infringe on what I am supposed to be doing, what God has given as my mandate for life, I may just revert back to that. Boy, I'd really love to help you, but maybe somebody else would be better suited to be the person to help you with that. Okay? And there are healing activities. And on this list, here we go. Do's and don'ts. Do's. We're going to do them one by one. Not all at once. Here, you'll see them now. Rest and relax. That's my husband in a wonderful little spot in Costa Rica. Relax. What does that mean? All right, let's ask, what does relaxing mean to you? How do you relax, guys, ladies? Ride your bicycle. That would be so not relaxing for me. Works for you. Wonderful. Other strategies. What are relaxing strategies for you? Sitting in a deer blind? My husband would like that one. And what do you do with your brain during all that time? Very nice. Okay. And then shoot something. That's good. Others. Other strategies. You're going to help each other with this one. How do you relax? Walking. Power walk or leisurely walk? Like out there? Read a book. Okay, you're going fast. Read a book. How many of you find that really de-stressing to read a book?
Well, yes, exactly. Not level 3 gas. Let me just get that clear.
Okay. That's important, because if I go to read, my brain says, you should be reading this, you should be reading in Spanish, and you should be correcting papers. I have a lot of papers I need to be grading. So to read, to say, this is going to be pleasure reading, and be really, really clear on that. and shut off that other guilt trip thing. Okay, then he was next. What was yours? Huh? Talking. Talking over coffee. Wonderful. Yeah. Connecting with people. Okay, yes. He said math. Video games. Okay, let's stop there. Video games. How do you know when to stop? Because you know video games are addictive. And if there's an addictive personality, it can go there. So how do you know when to stop? Okay. But you hear the difference? For one, it's relaxing. To somebody else, it can take them to a very bad place.
Right.
Well, so that you have to know yourself.
Yeah. My wife's not home and I get home, I play for 30 minutes, or an hour, and it just kind of unwind.
Okay. Sounds healthy to me. Yes. We had a woman over here. You don't allow. Okay. My husband and I have said various times, when we go out on a date, we're not going to talk business. And we're sitting at the restaurant, and we're looking at each other, and we're both really quiet. And he's going, "Yeah, you really want to talk about it, don't you?" And I go, "Yeah," because our lives are so enmeshed in our ministries. So it takes a real decision, because you both, at least in our case, we both love it. And so we have to say, we are more than this. Yes, we are this, and we love talking about it. But we are more than this, and you need to make that time to say, and there are the times that we're going to be just Dick and Cynthia. Yes.
And you have to have a relationship that stood through all that time together outside that ministry.
Exactly. We had one missionary that came back from furlough. He and his wife left for the field after their kids were grown and gone. And they came back and gave everybody a book on sexuality. And you're going, yeah, okay, you guys are old and you're giving this stuff to us. This is when we were young. And I go, what's going on? And they said, we went on vacation and the husband did not know what to do with his wife. He said, I didn't know what to do with you. I knew what to do with three sons. I played frisbees on the beach or on the field or whatever with the boys or whatever. What do I do with you? She said, I can try to catch a frisbee. I mean, how sad is that? They did not have... They did not have an ongoing, up-to-date relationship of who they were as a couple. And apparently they found it somewhere because came back with all these books. But, yeah, you want that ongoing relationship. There was a comment here. Yeah.
I like to order good food or cook good food.
Oh, I bet you have a lot of friends. People that want to come and eat that good food. Really? You get in a zone to cook. Very interesting. Okay. Huh? Hiking. Nature. Here we go back with the walking. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That sounds so stressful to me. My weeds get up there. You could... Well, see, I need you to come to my house and help me realize that. Weeding is her relaxation. For me, it's a stressor. The weeds are growing. One of these days, I've got to get home. I've got to, get down there and do that. Are you hearing the differences among us? We're all unique, but God has given us each capacity to find where we replenish, how we replenish. if you don't know what your way is to replenish, spend a little time before the Lord and say, Lord, I guess maybe I'm not replenishing real well. Take me somewhere where I can learn at your feet what it means to relax, what it means to rest. Okay, eat nutritiously. And this avoid sugar is not legalism. It's not hard and fast. It's just you know, a lot of times they'll tell you to cut out sugar if you have this or that or something else. I should have put avoid caffeine, but since I love coffee, I'm not going to say that. Get more than enough sleep. What about more than enough sleep? Why am I saying that? When you're in a super stressful situation, regular sleep is not restorative because you're not going to be sleeping well. So you need extra sleep to make up for the difference of that additional stress. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, talk about what happened to God and others. How many of you say, I have an accountability partner? Is it a requirement in Teen Challenge to have accountability partners in your ministries? Do you require it of your leaders? It's really, it's smart, other than wise. It's just a strategy that keeps people on the ground, but you can't assign it from above. It has to be a decision that you make on your own, because we have seen what happens when mentors are assigned to people, and they go, this guy's an idiot. What does he know about my life? Or, she doesn't relate to me in any way, shape, or form. Is somebody going to be doing a teaching on mentoring?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah, we're going to talk about requiring.
Okay, I just may have undone everything I just said, but when I live in Springfield, Missouri, there's a Bible college in my city, and when girls that are at the Bible college are in the counseling program, if they hear me speaking, I get a number of phone calls every now and then that say, hey, I want you to be my mentor. And I'll say, I don't do mentoring, but I'll do lunch or breakfasts or coffees, and I'll meet with you. And if you get anything out of it, great. If not, we've had some nice times together. Have ongoing relationship with a number of young women that are today in ministry. Some of them are still there in spring. You know, a whole bunch of them. Yeah, I don't need that pressure in my life. But I know I have a lot of life that's feet on the ground experience that is just going to flow out of conversations. And if they get something out of that, just talking, that's going to be fine. There are people who take mentoring to another level. I admire Beth Grant. I admire Alicia Scholey, who have this mentoring, and I'm sure whatever you do is good. I'm sure it's excellent. It's not where I am, so I trust you. But the fact of the matter is, I would hate for somebody to put me over someone who would look at me and go, I don't relate to her. What does she have to say into my life? And I'd feel this obligation to, oh, I've got to keep her online. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. So let the accountability be by mutual consent. That's the healthiest form of the person that you're really going to talk to. Because if it's somebody that you think is on a different level than you, that you're responsible to. Now, in missions, we have mentors. We have missionary mentors who take the guy who doesn't know anything about this culture and they're going to guide them and they're going to lead them. And that's very purpose-oriented and it's focused and it's great. That's exactly what it's supposed to be. But I'm not sure the person, unless there is a click emotionally and relationally, the person is really going to be all that open and honest about the depth of his heart, the recesses of where he's really at inside. So talk to God. Find somebody that you can talk to that won't be judgmental, that's not going to report you to the boss. Somebody that'll just listen. Okay? And if you want to undo anything I said, you've got tomorrow. Okay. Write about what happened. Journaling, letters, emails. Here's another interesting thing that I've learned recently in my brain studies is that writing by hand, actually you do a different process, a different emotional process when you write by hand than if you're typing. I am a great notes taker. I can take notes in a, like at the AACC conference that I went to, I could go into a session and I have taken almost every word the person presented for, you know, an hour and 15 minutes. I've got it. 10 pages, single spaced. But I haven't processed it. I've just taken it down. What I write by hand is part of my process. I talked with the woman yesterday, the widow, that we had breakfast, and I said that journal you did when you were journaling, I said, was that by hand? Because she sent me the copy that was on her computer. She said, oh, no. I sat out by the water's edge, and I wrote. And then in the afternoon, I'd transcribe it because I wanted it saved in my computer. And she said, when I'd transcribe it, I would have a chance to rethink it. I could clean it up grammatically and orthographically and all that. But she said it was the process had already happened by writing it in the first place. So that's healthy. Laugh when you can. I am the world's worst joke teller, my whole family. When the kids hear me try to tell a joke, they go, oh, Mom, you know you're going to forget the punchline. Don't go there. But I try. But I love humor. So I love to laugh at when other people can be funny. Love it. But I know the value of laughter. And to be able to appreciate the humor in a situation, it's just plain healthy. Set small goals. Small goals. Number 8, keep some sort of routine. Small goals, yeah, a personal. You remember the movie What About Bob? No. Was that the one where De Niro was his therapist and he said baby steps? Oh, it was Richard Dreyfuss. Okay. But he was going, take baby steps? That's the best psychological advice you can give somebody. Don't go from here to there. Part of a seminar I do talks about the 4 phases of self-care, emotional, physical, spiritual, and intellectual. And I have this whole big chart of on each area, where are you? Where are you now? Are you down in the low end? Are you in the middle range? This is the high end of all of these 4 areas. And then you score yourself and you add it all up. And what I say at the end of it is, okay, if your number, if your total score, you know, 25 points each area, if your total number is 50, don't say, okay, my goal is to be 100 because that's so unrealistic you'll never get there. Make your goal to be 55. You know, if you're on the far left side of this area, just look to move up a little bit because that's going to be a doable goal. It's something you can actually strive for. It's not going to crash you under the weight. And exercise. I hate to say it because I hate to do it, but when I don't exercise, I have more bad days than good days. Yeah, I have to. I'm forced now because of this new hip thing that I have to do my exercises. I do them every morning before I get out of bed. I do some. And it just, you know, it's healthy. If a 64-year-old woman can do it, you guys can do it. Okay. Do spend time with those who are supportive and helpful. A little friends there. Who do you have in your life that are supportive and helpful? Spouse, you're lucky. You're lucky too. Who else? Who do you have? Who do you go to? Ooh, that's good. That's good. That's rare. He only has space for so many people on that level. So you're blessed, okay? What other kind of people in our lives can be in that role? How do you manage that? I love that. Yeah. Very good. And that's the point of it, is when you figure out that I need to have a support team, you make it work at any cost. Just do it. I used to say to the missionaries, if you're worried about somebody back home, spend the money. Who cares? If we have to go in debt for our phone bill, do it. Because that worry is going to keep you from being effective. And thankfully now we've got Skype and we don't have to worry about going into debt on our phone bills. Okay. Cry if you can. Now, this doesn't mean uncontrollable, never stop. You know what? In the counseling room, we have Kleenex boxes all over the room. For 10 people, we probably have 10 Kleenex boxes. And my boss, the lead therapist of the place, he designed our ministry. He's amazing. He says, we've never lost anybody yet to tears. He says, feel free to cry. Worst that'll happen is you'll fall asleep and in a heap on the floor, you'll cry yourself out. When you wake up, the tears will be dry. We can continue. I mean, that is open as you can get. I mean, feel free. Just cry. Go right ahead. Do what you have to. Because they're afraid that if they start crying, they won't be able to stop and they'll go crazy. That's the inner fear. That's why people will go through all kinds of contortions to not cry. Say your tears are welcome here. And if they know that, it's a safe place. You've created a safe place. And number 12, pray, 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 pray. Guys, this is what this ministry started at. It's how we begin our spiritual walk. Why is it so easy to have begun in the spirit and try to work it out in the flesh? Why do we say, I can do this? No, you can't. Pray. God is that close. I love in Spanish, the word is un susurro en la oreja. Just a breath, a whisper in your ear. He's that close. All you have to do is just begin, and he's there. Reflect on the word. Okay, you know it. Okay, do. Sing or listen to music. This means something different to different people. How many of you love the music at the church you go to? That's why you go to your church. Well, it's one of the things that you love at your church. It attracts you to your church. What's the style of the music there? Okay. What's yours? You go to the same church? Oh. But is that kind of style? Okay. Somebody else? Who else loves the music at your church? Yeah? Same thing. Anybody else say, I love my church. I'm not crazy about the music at my church. What's the style?
It's contemporary, but there's not enough of it. I came from a lot of music in church, and although my church is very progressive, and I love all much about it, it's like one little song at the beginning, and then a few at the end, and I just miss being led into worship by more than one song that's kind of choreographed.
Got it.
No,
I think we all understand. I do. I don't think it has anything to do with style. I think where we came to know the Lord kind of determines the style of music we like. And it stays with us unless we've actually made an intentional progression to another style. But what it's really all about is getting into an atmosphere of worship. So whatever that means for you, that music is going to speak to you. To me, I'm sorry, I've been ruined by Latin America. I cannot enjoy the music at my home church. It is so excellent. I go, okay. It's amazingly great. It's too good. It's just too good. Turn up the volume. I wanna move. I wanna feel it. I wanna, you know, and yeah, that's music. That's what you want in a worship service. You wanna say, praise you, Jesus. And this, oh, our Father from whom all loves. Fine. It's excellent. Clap, 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 clap. Yeah. But that's me. That's me. But when I'm in that church, what's my responsibility? My responsibility is, Lord, I am part of the body of Christ, and these people love this. And you're the only people who, oh, shoot, it's on tape. Anyway, somebody else is going to find out, too. But nobody that knows me in Springfield, Missouri, knows that I'm not crazy about the music at Central Assembly. They just don't. Because... Now they do. Okay. It's boring. It's just a little bit too high church for my tastes. But I'm part of the body of Christ. And so as part of the body, I have an obligation to match my spirit to what's going on. And they're loving it. And they're entering in. And so I can get past the style. I can get past the soft volume, and I can go, Lord, I am here for you. Focus on the words. The words are always amazing. Oh, good stuff. And I get there, and it brings me into the presence of the Holy One of Israel. And I'm there in spirit and in truth. Doesn't matter the style. Not only that, I get to go back to Latin America like in a week or two and I get it all revved up again. Okay. Time? Should we stop? Yes. Educate yourself about traumatic reactions. Here we go. This is what we're doing here, educating you. And know that the intensity of the pain will not last forever. The good news is pain diminishes over time. Unless it's not attended to. Same thing with the physical body. If you have an infection and you don't cut it open and get the infection out, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse until the pus goes popping out everywhere. But you attend to the need and the pain will reduce as the healing is the natural process. It will take place over time. So you can give encouragement that this feeling that you have won't last forever. Okay, anticipate difficult times will come. It's not like just because you get through this means everything's going to be great from now on. Search for and find perspective and meaning in the event itself. That's very healthy. If a person can find the good in what has happened to them. Now, careful, 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 careful. You don't want to project, oh, this was a terrible, 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 traumatic thing that happened to you, and God's going to use this to help somebody else. Because that person is immediately going to feel pressure, anger, how mean of God to do that for me. Here, look what I went through so that somebody else can be benefited. My niece, who lost her 2-year-old baby. People say the most stupid things after a death. They just say stupid stuff. And one of the things is, oh, just think of all the mommies you're going to be able to help who lose their children. Please, she's a grieving mommy. Her child died. So that meaning in the event, don't even go there right then. Give it plenty of time. Let them come to, there was something I got out of this. There was something I can take and benefit somebody else. Now and then you can say the question, how are you doing with blah blah blah? Have you learned anything that is really beneficial to you yet? You're projecting the idea that they will. You're projecting the idea that there is benefit in the darkness. Don't start there. Give it time. But, you know, along the way, you just check in with them. Keep projecting. There will be the day when you'll look back on this and you'll have a different perspective. Ask for help and let others help you. That's pretty positive. Okay, we'll end there.